Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
By the end of this month, half the shows on Broadway will close. Last Sunday alone, 9 of those 12 shows said goodbye, including Young Frankenstein, Grease, and the long-running Hairspray. But is bad news for Broadway good news for off-Broadway and even off-off-Broadway? Let's talk to Robert Villegas, host of Playbill Radio and editor of the Playbill Broadway Yearbook, and Sandra Gibson, president and CEO of Arts Presenters. That's the national service organization for performing arts presenting around the country. Thank you both for joining me. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And
thanks, Brian.
You know, I should note for our listeners that the slew of closings isn't entirely the fault of the economic downturn. Some were limited runs that happened to finish this month. But Robert, when 12 shows close, that means 12 theaters go dark in Times Square. Can we expect these houses to be filled with new productions anytime soon?
Well, I have to tell you, most of those theaters actually have already been booked. And I think if you look historically, and what I did was I actually sat down and looked over the past couple of seasons. The number of shows closing this January is not considerably more than in previous seasons. Last year, 12 shows closed during those first 10 weeks of the year. This year, 15 shows are closing. So it's a little bit more, but among the shows that are closing are three Tony-winning best musicals, Hairspray, Spamalot, and Spring Awakening. So I think people notice it a little bit more. The number of shows closing during this time is not historically appreciably more.
So you think that this slew of closings into the teeth of the recession has maybe been overreported a little bit by the press?
Well, a little bit, but it's not so much the shows that are closing. What I'm concerned about is the number of tickets being sold overall. That a lot of shows that were selling out are now only doing maybe 90% or 80% or 70%. Not enough to close them, but it definitely is a decrease in the number of tickets being sold. But as far as shows actually closing, well, as I said, last year 12 closed during this time. This year 15 are closing in the same period. But we also have, between now and the Tony Awards, there are 22 shows that are scheduled to open, which is exactly the same number as opened last year. I think a lot of these shows also were in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. These were scheduled to open. We've really lost the three shows that were announced to open this season actually did not open. So it's been a net loss of those three shows that will never open. I'm now looking up till next season. I'm concerned about what's going to happen 2009-2010.
Sandra Gibson, president and CEO of Arts Presenters. Tell us more about who your group represents. Is it national touring companies and things like that, or who?
It is national touring companies. It is performing arts centers and festivals on campuses in municipalities. So it's really all the professionals who connect an artist and their work with an audience, and it's across the performing arts.
And I read that some of the shows that closed on Broadway have begun extensive national tours, even incorporating some original Broadway cast members. So in this climate, can a show actually make more money on tour? Can a Broadway show ironically survive better away from Broadway?
Yes, that's absolutely the case. And what happens in New York on Broadway very much affects the rest of the nation for many reasons. And I think it's an indicator of the effects on the broader arts and performing arts scene in the United States. But we, touring shows are supporting a number of performing arts centers. Many of them balance their budgets on the strength of Broadway touring attractions, and touring events can generate, a $500,000 or more a week, usually higher than the original cousins on Broadway. In fact, I was just looking into the other day in Phoenix, Tempe, Arizona area, where they're maybe doing 6-7 shows a year. The economic impact on the Broadway shows is $43 million annually.
Mm. Now, Robert, the New York Times quoted Mark Shaiman, the composer of Hairspray, describing the closing of a show as putting a pet to sleep, but not because it's sick, because you can't afford dog food. That's a pretty ugly metaphor. Is the bigger problem then, because you talked about your concern selling tickets, is the bigger problem raising the money to back the shows or getting the audience in the seats?
Well, there are some producers that are very, very good. They have these pools of investors that they call upon. And look at this, Jeffrey Richards. Jeffrey's producing 5 shows this season. He just came in on the revival of Hair. The previous commercial producer was having some trouble raising the money, and they brought in Jeffrey, and Jeffrey is in the process of assembling money for it. So I think because Broadway is still such a personal thing, there's a few big corporations that produce, but a lot of it is still just these individual people who produce things, and a lot of it has to do with their own the strength of their personal networks.
You're also a historian of Broadway, I understand. And I wonder if in past recessions, or even during the Great Depression, certain kinds of shows survived. Do people want to spend their money, when they don't have any money, on more escapist fare, things that reflect the hard times that they're experiencing in their lives? Is there any historic pattern to this that you're aware of?
Well, you know, people talk about the 1927 season, which is the season which the most shows was ever produced. It was 250 shows were produced on Broadway. It was only a few years later that the number was down in the 40s and the 50s. Nowadays, we usually produce about 30, almost 40 shows a season. But people say, well, you know, they produced all those shows in the 20s. And I say, well, how many of those shows, though, were hits? What's happening is you're kind of weeding out kind of the weaker shows. The hits will continue to get financed and will continue to come in. It's a lot of these sort of questionable shows, these sort of vanity shows that mm-hmm. are going to fall by the wayside.
Is it also that plays are relatively cheaper than musicals and therefore more likely to survive? You know, things like Xanadu, which is closing, will just have a tougher time.
Yeah, Xanadu is gone, but they closed last fall. You know, with a musical, you have an opportunity to make a fortune if the show is a hit. You also have an opportunity to lose a fortune. So it's a bigger gamble with musicals. A show like August Osage County, which is a conservative size sort of a show, mm-hmm. is doing very well. They don't have to sell out the theater that they're in to make money. It was wisely produced. But you were talking about historically, back in the 30s, during the Depression, shows ran much shorter period of time. That's true. As the Depression went on, people became more interested in seeing things that had kind of a social consciousness to it. People like the author of Waiting for Lefty and Clifford Odets is the name I was looking for.
Right.
People like that had quite a career during that period, but the audience would split. Some people wanted to see things that reflected what was happening mm-hmm. in their lives. Some people wanted to escape from what was happening in their lives. So it was a period of very lighthearted musicals, but mm-hmm. also for some very serious things got put on. It was a very difficult time financially, of course.
Listeners, I wonder if you have some thoughts on this. We have about 5 minutes for calls. What would you like to see in the theater if you're going to spend your money on it now? Do you want to see more serious stuff that reflects the world condition and the national condition? Do you want to more go to escape right now? What would be attractive to you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Sandra, you wanted to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in. I mean, first of all, let me say that our annual conference, the APAP conference, opens today here in New York with 4,000 people from around the world weighing in on these issues. I do think that I want to go back to something that was said earlier about the pipeline. And if we don't see new shows reopening and replacing shows that are closing, there is some concern about the pipeline, which can be 2 years long getting out to the field and touring Broadway. So I think that's an issue of concern. In terms of what do audiences want meaningful experiences. We're getting reports from our members across the country that it is things that are commercial, it is things that are poignant, it is things that are risk-taking and on the edge. It is really all over the map, but people definitely want to come together. I was at the Public Theater yesterday where we talked about creating a life in the theater today and how you sustain art and sustain theater.
And your group helps present the Under the Radar Festival at the Public, right?
Absolutely. We were there opening Under the Radar yesterday, and we talked about creating an ecology that allows for economy and these kind of cultural opportunities where you remove the barriers between the artist and the audience. So how do we get out of the way of that relationship and create work that's cost-effective, fast, get the work out there even in developmental phases in theaters and some of our performing arts centers, put up a production and show people the development process and create a kind of vitality.
Mm-hmm.
Susan Laurie Parks is in residence at the Public Theater. She's a master playwright in residence there, but she's not only writing, she's part of the life of the theater. She wrote her first play in 5 years in her first 6 weeks in residence at the Public, just because she was linked in a different way to the community there.
Uh-huh.
So I think we have to also focus on sustaining that artistic flame, and really creating and sustaining a life in the theater and change the culture to support it.
It's such an important concept, theater as community, not just as, you know, turn off the lights and be entertained. But many of the smaller venues, off-Broadway theaters, festival shows, they're able to offer ticket prices of $10 to $20. So, Sandra, do you think that their low prices will bring in audiences that may not shell out for Broadway now, or are these venues also likely to suffer because everything will?
I think that we can't deny the effects of the crisis on everyone. We are hearing, though, I was out in San Francisco a couple weeks ago, and small cultural centers, small theaters, are finding that their ticket prices really do connect with communities and their ability to come out and pay. So I think it does make a difference. But again, I don't want to dampen the effects of this crisis on mm-hmm. everyone. I mean, we're
right,
all
even,
in it.
Peter in Brooklyn, what do you want to see?
More serious theater, not necessarily more topically serious, but more serious theater, the kind of theater that I remember when I went to the theater in the late 50s and early 60s.
When's the last time you went?
The last time we go to the theater a lot.
What's the last thing you loved?
The last thing we loved, In the Heights.
That's a good one. Peter, thank you. Martha in Manhattan, what do you want to see?
I'd like to see more musical comedy.
What's the last great thing you saw?
Well, I saw Boeing Boeing. I didn't think I'd like it that much, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Jordan in Mamaroneck, what would you like to see?
In terms of theater as community and theater, a meaningful social experience, nothing for me touched Fela, the off-Broadway show, which I think a lot of people have hopes will continue in the next year.
Thank you. Robert, does that have a shot of going to Broadway?
I don't know about Broadway, but by the way, I'm also from Mamaroneck. Hey, Mamaroneck. But yes, there was a tremendous production. It was on a lot of top 10 lists. I don't know if it would necessarily move to Broadway. It's not necessarily that kind of a show, but it did do very well off.
Woohoo, Mamaroneck, New Rochelle. Emily on Long Island. Hi, Emily. What do you want to see?
I want to see murder mysteries and thrillers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's really escapist.
Well, also because you think it's definitely worse than we have it, you know. I mean, at least we're not embroiled in horrible murders. So that's escape.
Thank you. Di in Chatham, you're on WNYC. Hi, Di.
Hello. I think we should bring back the best-selling playwright of all time, who did very well on Broadway during the Depression, William Shakespeare. And the greatest thing I saw recently was Patrick Stewart in Macbeth. And I also think that Broadway might consider doing what the Metropolitan Opera has done, which is introduce a block of $25 seats, which brings audiences in, subsidized seats so that the seats are filled and more people get to know Shakespeare.
You just like Shakespeare because he's British. Di, thank you very much.
He belongs to every country.
We have about a minute and a half. What are you both looking forward to seeing that's coming up? Sandra?
Well, not only what's happening here this week with all of us converging, I think it's an extraordinary time to be doing this work. I mean, for Broadway, it needs to continue to find its voice and a contemporary voice. For the rest of us, at the end of the day, what's important is how we make connections one to another, the connections we make in our community.
Mm-hmm.
This is our power, and I think we've got to exercise it in new ways and stay the course.
Robert?
I'm looking forward to seeing Tova Felcher in Arena's Vow on Broadway, Jane Fonda in 33 Variations, Neil LaBute's new play,
All
Reasons
right.
to Be Pretty, they're reviving Guys and Dolls, West Side Story, Hair, Dolly Parton's musical, 9 to 5, opening this spring, Rock of Ages, for people who love the 80s, and they're actually advertising the fact that their tickets are under $100, but it's sort of like a It's sort of like a Jersey Boys for a slightly younger generation. They're reviving Waiting for Godot on Broadway, Hedda Gabler on Broadway. Blythe Spirit is going to have Christian Ebersole and Angela Lansbury. It's going to be a very busy spring.
Moral of the story, for all the press that the closings are getting, we should be at least as much talking about the openings.
Absolutely. There's something for everybody.
10 seconds, Robert. A cast member from Xanadu suggested that actors take a pay cut so ticket prices can be reduced. Are you for it?
Well, I don't know if the union would go for that. I mean, if they did an across the board thing and producers agreed as well, then maybe.
Sandra Gibson, president and CEO of Arts Presenters. Robert Villegas, host of Playbill Radio and editor of the Playbill Broadway Yearbook. Let's hope everything comes up.
Amen.
Amen.
Roses.
Thank you.